Members of the court, I am Gerard Piccolo representing the appellant, Jessica Lange. This case involves issues in two areas, basically suppression of evidence issues, as well as ineffective assistance of counsel issues. But with regard to the suppression of evidence, Ms. Lange was a passenger in a car that was stopped for speeding just immediately prior to the traffic ticket being given to the driver, a Mr. Fristo, I think. Another officer smelled marijuana, and at that particular time, Ms. Lange was ordered out of the car shortly thereafter. With Ms. Lange, as she came out of the car, was her purse. When Ms. Lange came out of the car, the officer ordered Ms. Lange to put the purse down on a hood of a car. I'm not sure which car it was. Later on, that purse was searched, and there was methamphetamine found in the purse. Your Honor, with regards to car searches, the U.S. Supreme Court, as well as this court, has said that car searches don't necessarily translate into body searches without I use the term, a heightened degree of scrutiny, largely because the body is to be protected as opposed to the car's interior.
Once the smell of marijuana was detected, wasn't there probable cause to search the vehicle and the occupants?
Probable cause to maybe search the vehicle, Your Honor. I'm not willing to concede that because of the Rodriguez case, which we're talking about here in a few minutes, but that would be my argument with regard to the search of the car.
If the purse had still been in the car?
I'm sorry?
If the purse had still been in the car, could the officer have searched the purse? Any container came within the vehicle?
Yes, and that's Wyoming versus Houghton, and I cited that in my brief. There's no question about that. What Ms. Lange is doing is drawing a distinction between a purse which she is in possession of and a purse that is separate and distinct. If you read Wyoming versus Houghton, that's pretty much clearly the distinction the Supreme Court drew in that particular case.
Isn't that a distinction drawn by Justice Breyer's concurrence?
I think it's also done by the majority opinion, or the opinion. I think it was a 5-4 decision, Your Honor, and I think Justice Breyer was the concurrence which turned it over. So I think the purse being separate from the individual that cited, or in this particular case, Ms. Houghton, makes a great deal of difference in this particular case, because as Ms. Lange came out of the car, she had the purse with her.
So is it your position that any time an occupant of a vehicle takes a container from the vehicle with them when they exit the vehicle, that container, the nature of the container changes?
Well, in this particular case, the nature of the container was a purse, all right, and that
You're not saying a purse is not a container.
I'm not saying a purse is not a container. Okay. Wyoming versus Houghton says it's a container.
All right.
Okay. Well, for instance, you might have some sort of like, I don't know, some sort of container like a coffee grounds or, you know, a can or something like that comes out. That's certainly not a personal sort of item which a purse would be. And so the difference would be obviously the difference in the container. All right, but in this particular situation, it was a purse, and then you have the language from Justice Breyer as to the nature of a purse. And our position is that purse came out with Ms. Lange, and therefore the heightened scrutiny comes into play because it's part of her person, and it contains personal items. And that's the distinction I'm making to the court, and that's the distinction I made in my brief.
The officer here testified that he saw her rummaging about in the purse at the same time he smelled the marijuana. Is that significant to our analysis?
Well, I think you can go a little bit further than that. I think the officer clearly said she was smoking.
As well.
Yeah, as well. And I think that's why she was rummaging him, because if you look at the exhibit, which contains, I think it's exhibit 1 or 2, contains the contents of the purse, you'll see that there's a cigarette box in there, and I think there's a lighter as well.
Wasn't there testimony that after she lit the cigarette, she continued to rummage through the purse before she was asked to leave the vehicle?
I'll defer to the record. I don't remember that specifically, but I'll defer to the record. I think it's crystal clear from the evidence that you have, all right, that Ms. Lange came out of the car with the purse in her hand or on her, all right? The location of the purse prior to that time, you can kind of infer. Certainly the lower court made no factual findings with regard to where that purse was,
We know it was in her reach.
Her possession, she was rifling through it.
But the court made no factual finding as to it was separate and distinct or was in the back seat or was in the trunk or whatever it may be. The record is just blank on that. And the location of the purse is so important under Wyoming versus Houghton, as I mentioned before. Now, if I move on to the Rodriguez question, I think this court realizes that the U.S. Supreme Court in Rodriguez versus U.S., a stop cannot extend, a traffic stop cannot extend above and beyond the reason for the stop. Or more specifically, as Justice Ginsburg said in her opinion, the investigation of the reason for the stop. In this particular case, the ticket was right there, ready to be given to the driver, and then all of a sudden the other officer smells the marijuana. It's our position, and it's Ms. Lang's position, that at that particular point in time, it didn't make any difference whether the ticket needed to be given or not, and that was some contention in the lower court. The investigation of the speeding ticket had included. There wasn't anything else that needed to be done.
Is it your position that if officer has the ticket in hand, he's about to present it, and he sees facts that would justify a search, say there's a contraband in plain view, or facts that give rise to obvious probable cause, he just has to ignore those facts, give him the ticket, and say, have a nice day?
With regard to the stop, the answer is yes, but that would, again, I think what Justice Castle is saying is that's another instance or another reason, that's another probable cause problem. Okay.
It's a new and different crime, is it not?
I'm sorry?
It's a new and different crime.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So the analysis would commence with whether or not the officer permitted to be where he or she was and so forth.
Correct. Correct. And if you look at the record in this particular case, never, ever in the lower court did that ever enter into anybody's mind. The reason for the stop was the speeding ticket. And that was the justification. Under Rodriguez, the justification stopped once the investigation was done, and therefore anything above and beyond the investigation being done is not a legitimate stop.
So if the officer had given the driver the ticket, and the officer on the passenger side then smells marijuana and says, I smell marijuana, we're going to search your vehicle, is that a different situation?
I would say that's a different situation. That's an entirely different situation.
Would it be probable cause to search a vehicle at that point?
I think I answered Judge Castle's question, and the answer is to search the vehicle, not necessarily the person. And that's the distinction we're making.
Rodriguez maybe not be as applicable here as the issue of the purse inside or outside the vehicle.
Well, I think they dovetail, pretty much. I think they dovetail. I wouldn't necessarily exclude them, but yeah, I think you have the idea. With regard to the ineffective assistance of counsel, there's no question from the record, and I somewhat apologize to the court. I was not the attorney of record or not the attorney that tried the case. But my understanding is that Ms. Lang had some sort of episode. She was crying, sobbing, talking to herself, whatever it may be, and the situation was presented to the court. The attorney who was representing Ms. Lang at the time requested a continuance, and then the court chimed in and said, well, maybe it should be a motion to determine competency. And then, of course, the attorney of record then changed his mind and said, oh, it's a motion to determine competency. It should have been just a motion to continue, because I think the record is pretty clear that at some point during the trial, Ms. Lang was able to compose herself and proceed forward. It should not have been a motion to determine competency. There wasn't any reason to make it a motion to determine competency, because it was a sort of temporary matter.
I'm a little confused, because haven't you also assigned error to the court's ruling on the denial of the requests to determine competency? And how do we reconcile your position?
Well, we reconcile it, I think I said in my reply brief. If the state is not willing to allege that I needed to, or the trial counsel needed to appeal right away from the denial, that he could wait until the sentencing, then that would be fine. I think that was my position in my brief. So I don't really care about that particular issue at this juncture of time, because I think the state has conceded that this case was properly appealed and the issue of the motion to determine competency was properly appealed. With that, I'll reserve the... Go ahead.
How was counsel ineffective for asking for a motion to determine competency and not asking for a continuance.
Well, if you read through the record of trial, Your Honor, you'll see at one point Ms. Lang essentially says, I can't take this anymore. She was suffering from an episode. Again, I don't know what the basis of that episode would be, but she wasn't in a proper mind to make a decision to go forward and enter a plea. And I think that's where the prejudice comes from.
So was there a likelihood that the court would have granted the continuance?
I can't answer that. I don't know. I can rely upon my experience as a trial attorney. I don't know whether that would serve this court any good or not.
Didn't the trial judge effectively give her some additional time to compose herself before the trial?
Yeah, I think the answer is it started at 9, and then I think Judge Young then said we'll start at 1 or something along that line. But that was a little bit later on, but the situation still presented itself. So you've got to understand that voir dire went through without Ms. Lang having an episode. So I think this was probably a temporary sort of arrangement. I've run out of time, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Osborne, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, I'm Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General representing the State of Nebraska, and I'll begin with the Fourth Amendment issue. Below, the District Court overruled Lang's motion to suppress. Lang does not challenge the legality of the traffic stop, but she does make two claims on appeal related to that motion to suppress, that the stop was unlawfully prolonged and that the officers did not have authority to search her purse. One of the exceptions for the warrant requirement is the automobile exception, which authorizes warrantless searches of a vehicle where there is probable cause to believe that the vehicle contains contraband or evidence of criminal activity. This court has repeatedly held that the smell of marijuana alone provides probable cause to search a vehicle under the automobile exception. Regarding Lang's first claim about the prolonging the stop, a lawful traffic stop becomes unlawful if it is prolonged beyond a time reasonably required to complete the mission of issuing a ticket for the violation. Here, the traffic stop was not unlawfully prolonged. At the exact time that Officer Rentz began issuing the citation to the driver of the vehicle, Officer Marcello is on the passenger side, and he observes an odor of fresh marijuana emanating from the vehicle through the open passenger window, and these things occur simultaneously. At the moment that Officer Marcello observes that odor of marijuana, he has probable cause to search the vehicle and its contents under the automobile exception. And at the time that occurred, Officer Rentz had not yet issued or handed the driver the citation. So there was no extension of the stop. Officer Rentz did not delay in issuing the citation in any way. In fact, he was so engrossed in that he didn't even realize that the other officer had observed an odor of marijuana. So there's no measurable delay at all involved in the stop. The district court found that the traffic ticket had not yet been issued to the driver, so the stop had not yet concluded when Officer Marcello observed that odor of marijuana. And the record supports the district court's findings on that. Such findings were not clearly erroneous. The second issue involves the search of Lang's purse, and while this is not argued in the state's brief, I'll first point out that Lang's argument before the district court at the suppression hearing was that no probable cause existed to justify the search of the vehicle under the automobile exception because Officer Marcello's testimony that he observed an odor of marijuana was not credible. That was the entire basis of their suppression motion, is just he says he smells marijuana, that's not credible. And I would refer you to pages 28, 29, and to the top of page 30, where her attorney makes that argument to the district court at the suppression hearing. The same objection is renewed at trial. Now on appeal, she's asserting an entirely different claim as to why the evidence should be suppressed, where she appears to be conceding that the officer did have probable cause to search the vehicle because she did smell an odor of marijuana emanating from the vehicle, but now she's asserting that the purse was an exception to that authority because it was part of her person. And as a general rule, an appellate court will not consider an argument or theory that's raised for the first time on appeal. It was mentioned that the district court did not make any factual findings on where the purse was in the car. Well, that's because that issue was never brought before the district court to do so.
Is there a fact in dispute? Was she clutching her purse? Did she put it down? Is there some fact in dispute that would be important?
Well, I mean, it would depend on whether this court finds any of those facts as to exactly where the purse was located would be important to their decision and to your decision in this case.
Do you read Wyoming versus Houghton to those facts to matter under the Houghton analysis?
I don't. I think the facts here are clear that the purse was somewhere in that front passenger seat area. She was rifling through the purse. So it was somewhere where she could be doing that. It's either next to her or sitting on her lap or at her feet. The purse is somewhere in that area.
Does a finding of fact at a lower level preclude our consideration?
I don't think it does, but what I'm pointing to is that Lang never asserted before the district court that was the basis of her objection. She's changing the basis of her objection at this point on appeal. It was not presented to the district court. That's why there's no factual findings on the issue. But back to Justice Papik's question, I do not believe that it matters exactly where the purse was in the vehicle. So Wyoming versus Houghton holds that if probable cause justifies the search of a lawfully stopped vehicle, it justifies the search of the entirety of the vehicle and its contents that may contain the object of the search. That applies broadly to all containers within the vehicle without qualification to ownership. So when Officer Marcello observed this odor of marijuana coming from the vehicle, he irrefutably had probable cause to search the entire vehicle and its contents, any containers that could contain marijuana. That includes the defendant's purse. It's a container that is capable of holding marijuana. It's in the vehicle at the time that probable cause is established. I don't believe that Lang would be disagreeing that if a container within a vehicle is subject to search under the automobile exception, that a person, an occupant, cannot just limit that authority by just taking the container out of the vehicle. However, what she is arguing is that she took her purse out of the vehicle with her and that the purse is part of her person and not subject to that automobile exception. Essentially, what she's arguing is that purses are special containers that carry with them a heightened expectation of privacy that does not subject them to the automobile exception or to search under that exception when they are removed from the vehicle because, as she's claiming, it's part of her person.
Does your interpretation of the Wyoming case extend to a container that's in someone's pocket?
Well, I think that the DiRay case would indicate that search of one's person would include their clothing and any container that's held within that clothing. So that could include something that's in your pocket, something that is hidden inside of your clothing. If you've stuffed something in your bra, if you've stuffed something down your pants, in the DiRay case, that's what happened. You have somebody who has gas vouchers. They're counterfeit gas vouchers, and he has hidden them in his pockets and in his underwear, and so a search of his person that includes his clothing and what he's hidden inside of that clothing is not permitted. It presents a very narrow rule limiting the scope of the automobile exception that does not permit searches of one's person. And in that case, what they were talking about is searches of his pockets and the space between his shirt and his underwear.
So does it make a difference in this analysis when something exits one container and goes into inside the clothing or inside the garments or whatever?
I think it would if that occurred after probable cause was established. So in this case, after he smelled marijuana, if you have something sitting maybe in the center console, somewhere else in the vehicle. It's not on you. It's not in your clothing. And then you grab it, put it in your pocket, and get out of the vehicle. I don't think that would be permitted under the automobile exception under Wyoming versus Houghton, or under United States versus Diarrhea, or United States versus Ross.
Do you think that situation would be subject to search, is what you're saying?
Yes. There is a case that supports the state's position out of Idaho. This is State versus Easterday. It's 159 Idaho 173. It's a 2015 case. In preparing for this argument, I came across this case, which is why it's not provided in the state's brief, but it is directly on point with these facts. So essentially, you have lawful stop of a vehicle, probable cause established to search under the automobile exception. The driver is a woman sitting in the front seat, and she has her purse on the seat next to her, quote, right beside her during the stop. She gets out of the vehicle, takes her purse with her, and the purse is then searched outside the vehicle, has methamphetamine in it. She argues that the purse was part of her person and not subject to search under the automobile exception. The same argument being made here, the Idaho court rejected that claim, holding that the defendant's purse is not part of her person so as to exclude it from a search of the vehicle pursuant to the automobile exceptions. So the bottom line here is that a purse is not part of one's person. A purse is not part of clothing. It's not someone's clothing. And it's not a container that's held within clothing. Rather, it's an item of property that one carries with them that has their personal effects. The district court was correct in finding that the purse was a container located within the vehicle subject to search under the automobile exception. Unless there are further questions from the court, I would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time.
Thank you.
No time
for
rebuttal. Thank you very much. The next case of the day is State v. Jennifer A. McCulley.